Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm your host, once again, Pat Johnston. This is a weekly podcast that shines a spotlight on Michigan's political scene and the progressive movement that's happening to change that scene. It's a progressive podcast for those of you from Freeland to Flint, from Lowell to Livonia, from Escanaba to Ecorse, and from Mount Pleasant to Monroe. Oh, yes, I'm filled with alliteration this week. You know, for years, conservatives ran the state in the ground. But now progressives are not only fighting back, but winning some major battles here in the state as well. And we'd like to continue that trend while showing the rest of the Big Ten states that by showing voters you're willing to fight for them, much-needed progressive change can happen. Leftoflansing@gmail.com is my email. Please, please, please feel free to send me your comments. Let me know that you're listening, and maybe let me know if you've got a topic or a guest suggestion. I'll take those. Please send them my way to leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm always up for ideas, and yes, I will also accept some constructive criticism as well, I guess. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll be talking with Erin Roberts. She's from the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we'll talk about how victims can get help and ways that we can perhaps stem assaults from happening, perhaps beginning all the way back during the childhood years. So a big discussion happening here soon with Erin Roberts in just a few moments. Well, throughout the first few episodes of this podcast, I've made it well known that I'm a big fan of Attorney General Dana Nessel. Dana became a household name when she decided to represent April DeBoer and Jane Rouse, who wanted both of their names to appear on adoption documents for their children. When that did not happen, they decided to sue. That lawsuit eventually morphed into the right for gay couples to marry, and the Supreme Court in 2015 overruled Michigan's hateful gay marriage ban. It was a big, big, big victory. A great day. Nessel decided then to run for attorney general despite being an outsider. The Michigan Democratic Party establishment already had someone picked to run for the open AG spot. But while Dana Nessel is an outsider, she's also quite politically shrewd. She got the backing of the Cannabis Caucus and the Progressive Caucus. Those two groups are gaining more and more power within the state Democratic Party. And of course, we legalized marijuana here in Michigan in 2018. But then she received an endorsement from the Michigan Education Association that was huge. So those endorsements helped Nessel go on to win the party's nomination for attorney general, despite the fact that some state Democrats harbored severe reservations against having women at the top of the party's ticket. Now, of course, Gretchen Whitmer was the gubernatorial candidate. And so there were many Democrats who were thinking, ooh, I don't know, should we have a woman at the top of the ticket for governor and also a woman running for attorney general, not to mention also a woman running for secretary of state, and with Debbie Stabenow up for re-election for the U.S. Senate? Ooh, I don't know. Well, they proved all of those people wrong in the fall of 2018 when they each won their respective elections. Both Whitmer and Nessel proved that the lessons of 2016 wasn't that Trump won over the working class voter. No, that wasn't true. You know, for all of her errors, Hillary Clinton won the working class vote in 2016. Exit polls showed that. It's that 46% of the electorate stayed home, and that a majority of white voters believed in Trump's message that poor migrant workers were to blame for their problems. Whitmer and Nessel won on the power of ideas. They didn't try to run some kind of centrist campaign. No, they ran on progressive ideas. They conveyed a message of understanding the true problems that are plaguing Michigan and Michiganders. They explained to people how fixing the roads, education, and water system would benefit all of us. In Nessel's case, She ran on running the Attorney General's office in the exact opposite way that it had been run under years by Trump lackey Bill Schuette. Nessel didn't hide the fact that she fought to abolish the state's gay marriage ban. She didn't hide from the fact that she would hold polluters accountable for causing harm to the state. Nessel didn't hide her disdain for the Republican law passed in 2015 allowing adoption agencies, which accepted state taxpayer money, to discriminate against gay couples. She ran on a progressive platform. No, check that. She ran on a strong progressive platform, and Michiganders rewarded her by voting for her. Now, I knew that Governor Whitmer would draw lots of ire from Michigan's right wing during the next few years because, hey, she is the governor. But I also knew that the right wing would direct the brunt of their anger towards Nessel. The writing was always, always on the wall. Think about it. Nessel is gay. She's got a wife. She's got a family. It's everything that so angers the right wing. And she's tough and isn't afraid to throw some haymakers. And that angers them as well. For example, when the Attorney General announced that she would continue investigating 7 Michigan Catholic dioceses a few months ago for sexual abuse, she criticized the church for trying to self-investigate. Nessel said in a press conference on the matter, and I quote, this is great, "If an investigator comes to your door and asks to speak with you, please ask to see their badge, not their rosary." She continued by saying, "And here's why that matters. Because many churches and dioceses appear to be self-policing and encouraging parishioners to report abuse to them so they can conduct their own internal investigations. We've heard many stories from victims who have been encouraged to take settlements and sign NDAs or non-disclosure agreements. And victims may believe that they cannot or should not report abuse to us because the church is going to handle it, and simply put, that's just not true. Firstly, if you signed an NDA, you still have a right, and I would say a responsibility, to speak to law enforcement authorities. An NDA will not protect the church." That was Dana Nessel. Wow. I mean, that seems pretty cut and dry and ultimately correct to me and probably to you, considering what the Pennsylvania AG's office reported last year on the decades upon decades upon decades of abuse by Catholic priests on children. We should probably get ready to expect similar conclusions here in Michigan once that investigation is concluded. Oh, but the right wing in the state didn't throw their ire and disdain over the Catholic Church leadership, who are doing their best to cover up investigations from ever happening. No, they directed their ire at Dana Nessel because she urged victims to ask a person to see their badge and not their rosary. How could she? How could she? These right-wing snowflakes. Oh, man. Well, that was our first indication right there to me, and I think it was obvious to you, that they couldn't stand our new outspoken AG, mostly because she's telling the truth. But then the extreme right-wing blew a collective gasket last month when the Attorney General settled a case between the state of Michigan and the American Civil Liberties Union, which essentially said the state would no longer provide financial support to adoption agencies that cite religious reasons for denying to see gay couples looking to adopt. The plaintiffs, who the ACLU was representing, agreed to drop the case. Now, Michigan Republicans, with former Governor Rick Snyder, passed a bill, if you recall back in 2015, as I said, allowing faith-based adoption agencies to discriminate from helping same-sex couples from adopting a child. Ugh. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky blasted Nessel's decision, saying that she was just using her office to promote her political agenda. How dare she? Right, right, I understand, Mike. Unlike what you and Republicans have been doing for years. Right, Mike? Well, it was only a matter of time, but the right wing is now firing back on that decision. St. Vincent Foster Charities, along with foster parents and their foster child, are suing, claiming that Nessel's decision will force St. Vincent to close its doors. Now, see, that argument doesn't make sense to me. I mean, really, it doesn't. If you just follow the words of Christ to love thy neighbor, then serving all people and ensuring that all foster children have a chance to live in loving homes shouldn't be that big of a deal for any adoption agency. And adoption agencies like St. Vincent then would still receive state money. Ah, but the right wing can't have that and is suing the state. And buckle up, my fellow LOLs, because thanks to U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he's doing everything in his power to not only stack the federal courts, but he's already been stacking the Supreme Court with activist right-wing judges. So that means the fight is on, and it's up to us to keep fighting for the U.S. Constitution. It's also up to us to fight for the Michigan Constitution, because we're talking about a separation of church and state here. We're talking about the state constitution not being used for one side to discriminate against another side. Which brings me now to this point. The right wing is aiming for Dana Nessel because, come on, she's a lesbian. In fact, here's a headline from the right wing site called LifeSite on the Attorney General's decision with gay adoption. This is a headline. Said, lesbian attorney general in Michigan may have just ended Christian adoption services in Michigan. Now, that headline didn't read Michigan Attorney General. No, it had to throw in lesbian for good measure, of course. I recently had Detroit News columnist Ingrid Jacques on this podcast, and we had a good discussion. I mean, yeah, sure, we disagreed on most issues, but we found a little common ground on others. So you can understand my disappointment when she wrote a column claiming that Nessel is waging a crusade against Catholics. Waging a crusade? Really? Nessel's not calling for an army onslaught to do hand-to-hand combat. She's using the law and the Constitution to protect the rights of every Michigander wishing to adopt. And she's using the power of her office to investigate just how many priests not only committed sexual assault on children, but how many covered it up. That's what she's supposed to do. She's supposed to protect all of us. She's the state's attorney general. She's doing her job. Do you remember last week on how I highlighted Republican State Representative Beau LaFave from Iron Mountain? Remember, he's the head of that State House Military Veterans and Homeland Security Committee. And last week, this committee, on a partisan 5-4 vote, passed a bill that would stop local municipalities from preventing police to act as quasi-immigration officials. Essentially, these bills would end so-called sanctuary cities. LaFave pressed the bill's passage without producing any solid evidence as to why this bill was needed. I mean, he knows darn well that it'll lead to racial profiling. Well, the bill is still in the State House. We're watching that. LaFave now is back in the news this week because Ingrid Jacques quoted him in her Detroit News column, saying that Attorney General Nessel owes an apology to all Catholics for her religious bigotry. God. And even more, LaFave is threatening to issue articles of impeachment against Nessel if she offends Catholics like him one more time. What a snowflake. Ooh, snowflake, snowflake, snowflake. Of course, one could argue that fighting for the LGBT community is something that, you know, Jesus would have advocated, especially if it meant that a child could live in a caring home. But that's neither here nor there, I guess. Well, naturally, Dana Nessel did not take too kindly to Ingrid Jacques' column and fired back, saying Jacques and the Detroit News are the true hate mongers. All right. See, that's the kind of fight we need. Now, LaFave tweeted back, saying, unbelievable. Nessel's now referring to a reporter and the Detroit News as hate mongers. So, wait a second. He's now protecting the press. Beau LaFave is now a defender of the press. I mean, I find this rich, considering how the leader of LaFave's party practically attacks the press on an hourly basis. And now he's offended? Oh, man. But you know what? I get it. LaFave and his Republican pals and benefactors are scared of Dana Nessel because she's strong, she's a fighter, and she's got the majority of the people on her side. But not only that, she's a woman. Ah, hold on, scratch that. She's a gay woman. You put all that together, and you understand why LaFave is threatening articles of impeachment. But this is where their mindset is, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, please, go right ahead, sir. Please. Try to impeach Dana Nessel, Beau LaFave. You think women have low opinions of the GOP right now? Just think what'll happen when you try that stunt. But Representative Lefebvre, actually, I'd like to throw out an olive branch to you. Really, I would. I'd love to have you on a future Left of Lansing podcast, so that way we could discuss these issues in further detail. Really, I would. The aforementioned Ingrid Jacques was on, and she had a fine time on the podcast. I'll treat you nicely, don't worry. So please, all you have to do is call me. All you have to do is call me, and you can call me Collect Lefebvre. Call me Lefebvre. All right, sorry, that was my... I'm making myself laugh. That's horrible, right? I was trying my best Apollo Creed impersonation from Rocky II when he tells Rocky to call him Collect. Anyway, I think that's enough for now. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more. You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.
The Left of Lansing podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, and of course on leftoflansing.com. Word has it, that's Rick Snyder's favorite site. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
Thanks again for joining me here on the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston. Remember, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's very simple. That's at Left of Lansing. Well, as promised, joining me right now is Aaron Roberts. Aaron is the Senior Program Director for the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. Aaron, thank you very much for being on the podcast this week.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting us.
Well, Governor Gretchen Whitmer issued a proclamation declaring April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month here in Michigan. How important is it to have the governor put a spotlight on this ever-important issue? And what are some of the main messages that the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence hope to convey to the public during this very important month?
Yeah, it's always important when leaders in our community step up and step out to say that survivor voices are valued, survivor voices are important, survivor experiences deserve a chance to be heard and a chance at justice for what has happened to them. So the coalition is happy to have Governor Whitmer make that proclamation and to set a tone for the state as to our priority about ending sexual assault here in the state. The coalition, MCEDSV, is really hoping to make sure that people understand that we have a statewide sexual assault hotline that provides 24-hour, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, free confidential services and opportunity for people to call and voice what's going on in their lives, and that's 855-VOICES-4.
They don't have to give names or anything. People can just call anonymously if they're just looking for help.
Absolutely. They can be seeking help now. They can just want to talk through something that happened to them recently or many, many years ago. Just an opportunity for a kind, compassionate, trained person on the other end of the line that's there to hear them, support them, and guide them towards services if they wish to do that. Otherwise, just to be present with them in that time.
Now, Aaron, I read that Michigan State Police statistics indicate that over 12,000 sexual assault-related offenses were reported to Michigan law enforcement in 2017. That seems like a really high number, but from some of my other reading, is it true that so many more assaults go unreported?
Absolutely. The vast majority of sexual assaults are not reported. Typically, once somebody has come forward to make a report, they have experienced many different microaggression, sexual assault, or any other kinds of aggressions where they haven't reported it. And so at that tipping point where somebody really takes the moment to make a report and seek support and justice, it has taken a lot for them to get to that point.
Is one reason because many of these victims believe that their stories won't be believed?
Absolutely, that many believe that, and a lot of them rightfully believe that because of past history and what they've seen or experienced in media or in cases that had a really strong public eye towards them. And what we're seeing now is a bend the other way and many more statements where people are expressing that they believe survivors, that they support survivors, where they are creating spaces and avenues for survivors to come forward and be heard. While I don't think that arc has made a far enough turn that way, we hope that people will understand that there are places like our sexual assault hotline, Voices, that is there to hear them, to support them, and to help them plan for what to do in the next steps.
Erin, do you believe that the Me Too movement has played a big role in reversing that trend that you were talking about?
I think it's given a spotlight to what was going on, what was happening, what cultural norms and societal norms have been laid for decades and years to create a space where people weren't valuing the voices of those coming forward, and has made a turn towards opportunities for people to be heard. The Me Too movement gave a common language, a common voice, a common tagline for people to say, this is happening. It's happening far more than we know and talk about. And it's time for us to speak up, support survivors, so that we can move forward and end sexual assault.
Erin Roberts from the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence is joining us here on the Left of Lansing podcast this week. So, Erin, we were talking about, you know, some steps that victims can take to report assaults and, like, your 24-hour hotline there at the Coalition. But I was wondering if I could just delve a little bit deeper, maybe looking at it from the men's perspective. I mean, what can men do to prevent sexual assault? Does it start by simply, I don't know, speaking up or confronting another man when they see something happening and they don't think that it's right? Would that be a nice first step?
I think the first step is to educate and prepare individuals for understanding what consent is.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk about first steps, we could talk very elementally in that just the common language about consent that can bridge to, can I borrow your pen, is seeking consent all the way to a sexual encounter consent. Mm. And weaving that value and that understanding into our culture where we honor another individual's perspective and position and desire in asking those questions and presenting them. What I would say is that beyond just men, everyone needs to engage in a community where we are honoring each other for where we are and what we want to engage in, seeking permissions and seeking common statements and common delineations of where we are is a beginning point for a mutual respect that will in itself bring fewer assaults. But the other thing is definitely step in, step forward when and if you see somebody being harmed in any way is okay as long as it's safe to do so. Sometimes you may need to engage law enforcement. Cultural norms, locker room humor, and things where we are disparaging another person or another gender, over sexualizing comments or something like that, calling out and saying, hey, man, that's not cool, is really a great start for beginning to shape how we expect to interact with each other.
Can sexual assault or the sexual assault culture, can that start to be stemmed at childhood? I mean, have studies shown that if children are taught at an early age about toxic masculinity, for instance, and sexual assault, that those cases then would probably lessen over time if we started really, really early?
I think anytime we are educating people to treat each other with level of dignity and respect and autonomy for their body is going to engage in a future, healthier perspective for each individual. While there are many different situations that are present for a perpetrator to perpetrate, one of the most core things is a respect and honoring of that other individual as an equal, legitimate human with thoughts, needs, and feelings. From there, you have power and control that would need to be dealt with and many other aspects. But the root of cultural norms are shaped throughout our childhood, our adolescence, and all life experiences. So wherever we can weave consent, honoring the other person as a full human, full person in a feeling and healing person, will level a playing field of respect, for sure.
Erin, I'm not sure if you can answer this, but it's just kind of a broad question, but I was just wondering, do you believe that there is enough education happening here on the state level or the local level? And if not, what do you think some solutions could be?
Well, I haven't put myself out of business here yet, and the whole coalition is striving to make sure that we are engaging community members and programs throughout the state in supporting all the programs in the state that provide domestic and sexual violence services to engage their communities and provide that education. But we have a long way to go, and there's so many opportunities for us to reach out and integrate with anyone. Any missed opportunity to educate is a missed opportunity. And so we've got a lot of work to do, and there's plenty of us out there trying to do the work, but we always need more people to become aware, engaged, and support the change that we're seeking.
You're absolutely right. I think maybe what I was aiming more at is, do you think there's enough happening maybe on the state level with regard to laws that are on the books, or what's happening with our school districts? Do you think there's enough emphasis on sexual assault and what to do to stem it at that early stage? Do you think enough is being done there?
No, I think we have a long ways to go, and there are many, many integrative ways that we can bring education to individuals. So I think creating a law isn't always the right option, because a law can't legislate every single aspect of people's lives. And I think schools have heavy burdens, and it's important to be teaching equity and responsibility for self and care for others at all levels. I don't think we're doing it perfectly, and I don't think we're doing enough, but I think every time we do engage an individual, that is a success.
Joining me here is Erin Roberts. She is the Senior Program Director for the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. I just was wondering if I could turn things on a national level here, because the U.S. House just voted to authorize the Violence Against Women Act, or the reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. But unlike the past, when it usually passed by near unanimous consensus, that didn't happen this time. Only 33 Republicans, I believe, joined with House Democrats to pass the bill, and that was one Republican here in the state of Michigan joined Democrats to pass the bill. I guess this latest version of the act would increase the punishment on those who commit cyberbullying. And I was going to ask you about that when it comes to cyberbullying. Is that just a new facet of sexual assault that we just have to really start to pay attention to, that was something maybe about 15, 20 years ago we didn't even think about?
Yeah, I think as technology grows and expands, so will the tactics and techniques of those that perpetrate crimes on others. We'll meet that growth. And so we do need to stay aware and stay on top of what and how people are using technology to hurt and harm others. And so cyberbullying is an aspect of that. Cyberstalking is an aspect of that, needs to have attention drawn to it. There needs to be education and training around what and how to work through that. There are many things about that. With VAWA reauthorization, though, the core of VAWA as originally passed, that has support unanimously between political parties.
Yeah.
It is some of the additional pieces that are put in to protect survivors that seem to have a philosophical difference, some of those disagreements, but ultimately both parties are concerned with ending violence against women and protecting those against sexual assault and domestic violence.
If you don't mind me asking you this question, is how does the coalition feel about some of those additions? Because I know one of them that the Republican Party in general didn't really appreciate was that it would ban intimate partners, I believe, who've been convicted of abuse or stalking from having the right to purchase a firearm. Now, I've been reading some studies. There was one that was done by Michigan State University just a couple of years ago showing that when gun restriction laws were brought in to include dating partners, the prevalence of domestic violence homicides dropped as well. Is that something that your coalition supports?
Our coalition works very closely with the legislation as well as our national partners. When laws are proposed and written or being developed, or even once they're voted on, implemented, we work hard to make sure that the implementation or the many different aspects of that law are considered from a survivor's perspective. And so I can't talk in generalities about any one thing, as I haven't reviewed it fully. But what we do is we try to make sure that when looking at a piece of legislation, there are many unintended consequences that would harm a survivor, even though the title of a law may seem like, of course, this coalition would get on board with it. When you get into the letters of the law, it may have some unintended consequences. It may have some complexities that we need to suss out or talk to the legislators about or work out in rules. So it's a much more complex approach than what I think you and I could cover here today. But there are many different aspects, and we have a executive policy director here who works really closely on things like that and does take positions when necessary.
Okay, very well. All right, well, Aaron, once again, I was just wondering if you could repeat the hotline number again in case there are people out there who feel like that they've got nowhere to go and they need to talk to somebody, and that but they're fearful of going maybe to police and they're just fearing any kind of repercussions in general. What is the hotline number again?
The starting point for anybody who may need support can be 855-VOICES-4, and that's 855-VOICES, the number 4. And that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, the Michigan statewide sexual assault hotline.
All right, and your website again?
It's mcedsv.org.
All right, we've been speaking with Aaron Roberts from the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. Aaron, thanks a lot for being a guest here on the Left of Lansing podcast. I appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Want to give Pat a piece of your mind? It's easy to reach him. Just send an email to leftoflansing@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information.
Last call time here on Left of Lansing. This is where I like to share some quick thoughts on issues before we wrap up the podcast. Once again, special thanks to Aaron Roberts from the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. You know, I understand that her coalition has to work with both parties to ensure the safety of women and men who suffer from sexual assault. Plus, remember, sexual assault isn't just a heterosexual phenomenon. No, it also happens in same-sex relationships as well. But I asked Ms. Roberts during the interview a question about certain legislation that Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Dingell introduced in the U.S. House as an add-on to the Violence Against Women Act, which expired a few months ago. Congresswoman Dingell's amendment would prevent convicted abusers from having the right to purchase a firearm. Now, that seems like a safe and sane approach to take, right? Oh, no, not to the NRA nor its Republican lapdogs. No, they will fight to allow convicted abusers the right to bear arms. They just won't let them vote. Again, the new VAWA passed the House despite strong Republican opposition. But who knows what will happen in the Senate. With Mitch McConnell leading it, I'm not holding out any real hope. Oh, and of course, Chuck Schumer running the Senate Democrats doesn't really give me a whole boost of enthusiasm either. But thank you, Congresswoman Dingell, for the hard work that you do and for giving Michiganders a strong voice in the U.S. House. I did mention during my talk with Ms. Roberts how there is a study researched by Michigan State University criminal justice professor April Zioli showing that states which pass laws restricting gun access to domestic abusers leads to a drop in intimate partner homicides. I'll be darned. Here's what the study found. Said that restraining orders for dating partners that include firearm restrictions present in 22 states were linked to a 13% decrease in romantic partner homicides and a 16% reduction in partner homicides committed with firearms. Gun restrictions that cover emergency restraining orders in domestic violence cases were associated with a 13% reduction in intimate partner homicides as well. And laws requiring individuals with domestic violence restraining orders to relinquish firearms were associated with a 12% reduction in firearm intimate partner homicide and a 16% reduction in partner homicides committed with firearms. So we do have some evidence showing trends here that restricting gun ownership to those who have been convicted of domestic assault kind of saves lives. It's a trend. Why wouldn't we want to do everything in our power to continue that trend? I leave that question to you. But I think you know the answer.
You've been listening to the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, you can contact Pat by emailing leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Well, that's going to do it here for this edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. Listen, I greatly appreciate it that you take the time to actually listen to what I have to say. And I hope that I'm bringing you some fresh content, some interesting insight, and some really cool guests, so that way you can learn more about what's happening in the state of Michigan. And maybe for those of you listening outside Michigan, maybe this gives you an insight into what's happening inside our political arena. Not only that, but I hope you're also saying that there are progressives that are fighting each and every day to make Michigan a better place, to improve on exactly everything that Michigan conservatism has ruined. That's why I decided to do this podcast, and please remember that I do even more on leftoflansing.com. Please visit that site when you can. I'll be back next week with another installment of the Left of Lansing podcast. Have a great week, and remember to always take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.